Exodus chapter 20, verses 7 to 17. You shall not misuse the name of the Lord your God, for the Lord will not hold anyone guiltless who misuses his name. Remember the Sabbath day by keeping it holy. 6 days you shall labor and do all your work, but the seventh day is a Sabbath to the Lord your God. On it you shall not do any work, neither you nor your son or daughter, nor your male or female servant, nor your animals, nor any foreigners residing in your towns. For in 6 days the Lord made the heaven and the earth, the sea and all that is in them. But he rested on the seventh day. Therefore the Lord blessed the Sabbath day and made it holy. Honor your father and your mother, so that you may live long in the land the Lord your God is giving you. You shall not murder. You shall not commit adultery. You shall not steal. You shall not give false testimony against your neighbor. You shall not covet your neighbor's house. You shall not covet your neighbor's wife or his male or female servant, his ox or donkey, or anything that belongs to your neighbor. This is the word of the Lord.
As some of you know, I love porcupines. And this week, early in the week, I saw two porcupines on Bowen Road, and I was very excited about that. But last night, on my way up to Bowen Road, I saw the largest porcupine I have ever seen. Now, I'm talking today about not bearing false witness or lying, so it kind of restricts the story, but I'm trying to tell you just how big this porcupine was. I promise it was twice the size of any other porcupine I've seen in Hong Kong. I was stunned. The porcupine was stunned. The normal standoff. The porcupine flinched first. He turned around and there was a railing. And he tried to go under the railing. When he was younger and fitter and not so fat, I'm sure he could have fit under the railing, but that didn't work. So then he tried to go through the railing. He got his snout through, but because he's very upset, all the quills are going out. The porcupine got stuck. No kidding, he got stuck. And I'm going, what should I do? Should I go help him? Should I get behind the porcupine and just pull him out? I said, no, I would get stuck. But it took him quite a while to extract himself, and finally, he went around the railing. Now, I was meditating on the sermon for today, and I thought, what an interesting illustration God just gave me. When it comes to the Ten Commandments, I try to go under them. I try to go through them. I try to go around them. But I don't necessarily want to keep them. Last week at this service, I forgot I was holding them this way, and people said, what were you holding in your hand? Did you have two iPhones? No, I've got an example of the Ten Commandments. Remember, last week I had you try to remember them. Today we read most of them. The Ten Commandments were given to us for a purpose. In November 2015, we had the joy of having the author Philip Yancey with us for several days at Union Church. And Philip Yancey talks about, in one of his books, how he had a serious foot injury and he had very complex, delicate foot surgery. He was talking to the surgeon after the surgery. The surgeon says, I think we've got it fixed, but you're going to have to go through some physical therapy. You're going to have to not do a number of things for a few months. Philip Yancey lived in Colorado mountains. He was told no mountain climbing, no mountain biking, not even running, not even hiking. Philip Yancey said, yes, but once a year I have friends from all over and we gather together for a golf tournament. Can I golf as long as I promise to use only my upper body? And the physician said, Philip, I too am a golfer. And it would really hurt my feelings if you went golfing. Because the leg and foot motion in golf would destroy all the good work I have done. Please do not golf. And Philip Yancey says, that's the way our loving Father is. He says, there are some things that if we do, they are really going to hurt me and they're going to hurt you. There are boundaries that God has set down for a purpose. And we are in the middle of discussing these Ten Commandments. Some of us are going through Bible studies or small groups on the Just Ten program. That's why we're going through them from 10 to 1 rather than from 1 to 10. Who remembers what we talked about last week? What commandment? Thou shalt not envy or covet. The 9th commandment is don't be a false witness. Do not bear false witness against your neighbor. Now, to put this in context, to look at the New Testament, when Jesus came, he said, you can take all the laws and reduce them to 2. Remember what they are? Love the Lord your God with all your heart, mind, and soul. And number 2, love your neighbor as yourself. So we are not to bear false witness against our neighbor. From an Old Testament context, remember, Moses had just taken the nation of Israel out of Egypt. They're in the desert. They're camped at Sinai. And God reveals his law, his rules to them. In chapter 19, Moses realized he couldn't do it all. So his father Jethro encouraged him to delegate and appoint a number of judges. The judges would take care of any criminal or civil questions that were raised. And so now there had to be a justice system. The Jewish people realized that their God was a God of justice. And so God laid down a system for when there's a dispute, when there's a crime. Now, in the days before DNA, CSI, CTV, how do you think you can convict somebody of a crime? A witness. So it was very, very important, and we can read about this not just in Exodus, but in Deuteronomy and Numbers, that you cannot be convicted of a crime based on the testimony of one witness. Now, those of us who are married, let's be really honest. There's my truth, my spouse's truth, and then there's the truth, right? He said, she said. Two people can't really make it up. Now, let's just take a second and think, how then would you ever convict somebody of a crime? You have to have 2 or more witnesses, but they have to be absolutely trustworthy. And the worst thing imaginable would be for somebody to perjure themselves, to suborn them, to give false testimony, false witness. That was really, really wrong. In fact, a false witness had to suffer the same penalty as the person that he or she was witnessing. So, I had an experience several years in a courtroom. I'm kind of a courtroom junkie, and it's even more fun sometimes to go to a court in Hong Kong than it is to watch a court TV. But in this particular case, it was a complex case where a young man was accused of doing something wrong in Lok Wai Fong. Can you imagine that? He had 4 witnesses for his defense, and they all said he was absolutely blameworthy, blameless. The prosecution had 2 witnesses who said he did this, and he did this, and he did this. And I'm going, oh, man, this is tough. Who's the judge going to believe? The judge was brilliant. He said, all 4 defense witnesses and both of the prosecution witnesses are lying to me. Your testimony was ridiculous. I should charge you all for perjury. The judge took the truth very seriously. So did Moses, so did the nation of Israel. So how do we not be a false witness? How do we not lie? Take a second, turn to the person next to you. Is it ever right to lie? Can you think of an example where it is okay to lie? Oh, we still have to have a sermon and communion. Obviously, you've thought about this. Okay. I don't know about the South China Morning Post polls, but a few years ago, the New York Times took a poll, and here was the question. How many of you lie on a regular basis? Do you think 10% said yes, or do you think it was a little higher than that? 20, 30, 40, 50, 60, 70, 80, 91%. Of those surveyed said, yeah, we lie on a regular basis. Stephen Colberg, the American TV guy, in 2006 coined a word. It was word of the year, truthiness. There's truth, and then there's truthiness. It sounds like truth. It feels like truth. It's my truth. It doesn't necessarily have to be true. Truthiness. And he said, we live in a culture of truthiness. This year, Stephen Colbert got very, very upset because the Oxford English Dictionary coined or put in their dictionary a new word which has kind of taken the place of truthiness. You know what the word is? Came out of the United States political election, post-truth. We live in a post-truth. Truthiness situation. And we just talk, well, you know, yeah, maybe it's okay sometimes to bend the truth a little bit, to twist it. Well, there are white lies. But that's not what the Ninth Commandment says. The Ninth Commandment says, don't lie. Don't bear false testimony. Why? I'm going to give us three reasons as we prepare for communion. First of all, charity. Love. Remember Jesus says, love the Lord, and then love your neighbor? So if we are loving people, we are not liars. Now, what are the three most common ways to bear false witness? Number one, slander. We have gone through a very difficult time moving from one location to this location, and a lot of us really love the old church, and there's been tempers and things like that, and for the most part, people have been very Christian. But I would be lying to you if I didn't tell you that there are several people who came pretty close to slander. And I particularly admire our Building Union for the Future people who've taken some real hits by people for things that are completely untrue. So slander is when we know something is not true and yet we say it to hurt somebody else. Slander's bad. But how about gossip? Isn't gossip okay? J. John talks about gossip is when you have something you like to say about somebody you don't like. Gossip can be very, very dangerous, especially in a church situation. Oh, Pastor, please tell me more about this situation so I can pray for the person more effectively. Well, what they really want to do is get some information that they can then pass on to somebody else. We've got this amazing prayer team in the church. And it's a very confidential prayer team because it has to be, because there are some people say, hey, I'd really like to share what's going on, but I'm afraid it's going to be spread all over by everybody. We think gossip is innocent. Well, slander, well, yeah, that's bad because we're thinking bad things about somebody, but gossip. And I hear, well, the reason I gossip is that you don't give enough information, so I kind of have to make up some. Slander? Gossip? Or how about flattery? Is flattery bearing false witness? When you say some really nice things about somebody, but there's kind of a hidden agenda, there's a hidden motive, right? We want something from that person. But that's not the way we're supposed to be. J. John has an exercise that I have been trying to do, and it's been very, very difficult. I want you to listen carefully, and if you have a pen or your phone, you may want to write this down, because I challenge you to try this. He says, before you speak, if you have love and you have charity, think. And think stands for, you know, T-H-I-N-K. T stands for, is it true? Before I pass on information, is it true? H, is it helpful? There's some information that may be very, very true, but not very helpful. The one I like best, I, is it inspiring? Is it encouraging? N, is it really necessary for me to pass on this information? K, is what I'm about to say kind? Think before you speak. Or in the wonderful words of Dietrich Bonhoeffer in Life Together, exercise the ministry of keeping your mouth shut. Think how much better the church would be if we exercised the ministry of keeping our mouth shut. I was having lunch this week with another minister, and I was just about to say something that I think might be true that I wanted to pass on to this other minister, but because I'd read this think thing, I had to stop. Moses, when God calls him to lead the nation of Israel, he says, I am a man slow of speech. Well, I've been slow of speech this week. For the last 3 days, it's been very difficult because I've had to stop myself. But I'm glad that I stopped myself because I have not said some things that I really should not have said. Does that make sense? So if you have charity, you don't bear false witness, whether it's slander or gossip or flattery. Besides charity, we need character. Now, when Jesus came, he had a ministry, and who were his major opponents? The publicans, the sinners? No. The church leaders, right? They were called Pharisees. And when you hear the word Pharisee, what word do you think? Hypocrite. People are looking at our lives, and they're looking for something different. I'm really serious about Alpha. I pray that you will think about friends who are not from a church background that can come and explore the claims of Jesus Christ. They're getting ready to publish the third edition of the Atlas of World Christianity. There's an article on Hong Kong that I've had a chance to read, and it's pretty troubling. There are a smaller percentage of Christians in Hong Kong now than in the past. And people say, oh, how can that be? There's all these churches and booming, it's wonderful. Yes, Christians can go from church to church, but there's not a lot of new people, new Christians. And those who are not Christians are looking at our lives. If you're in business, they're looking very carefully. And so we have to be people of incredible character and integrity. Now, I want to say that this whole building process has filled my email with some interesting emails. And I have to say that as I read them, I say, Lord, if this is me, help me to change. And I want to thank those people who've sent me emails, some, you know, like the your friend in Christ, Anonymous, who have made me look at my character. And have I made mistakes? Absolutely. But when we bear false witness against someone else, we're trying to attack that person's character, that person's integrity. You see it in politics all the time, but friends, it's even in the Christian world. But the non-Christian world is watching us. So for the sake of charity, for the sake of character integrity, let's be kind. Let's be truthful. And I love the songs we sang in the main sanctuary that focused our attention on Jesus. Because I think the third thing that I'd like to emphasize is Christ. Christ knew what it was like to have people lie about him, to give false testimony. Think of the Jewish trial and the Roman trial. Remember, they had to scrounge up some witnesses to give false testimony. And when that didn't work, they had somebody who heard Jesus say that the temple will be destroyed. And Jesus was saying the temple will be destroyed. He was talking about himself and will be raised in 3 days. But at the trial, they said, this is blasphemy. He's talking about destroying the temple. And then the Romans took over, and Pilate. Remember Pilate's words? What is truth? He was cynical. I don't think he was really searching. But it's a question we've been asking everything. What really is truth? Well, the Bible from Genesis to Revelation says that God is truth. Titus 1:2, God does not lie. And Jesus says in John 14, I am the way, the truth, and the light. Friends, Jesus is the truth. God is true. We read about the Holy Spirit as the Spirit of truth. And because of Jesus Christ, we should not bear false witness, but we will. How many people really lie on a regular basis? Is it 91%? No, it's 100%, right? All of us have sinned. Only one person has been absolutely truthful. Only one person has kept all the commandments, and that's Jesus Christ. And he died. And sometimes we run into or try to run around the commandments, and that reminds us that we can't keep them, that we are sinners, and that we need a Savior. And that's why God sent his Son. And that's what we're going to celebrate. But before we celebrate, and I think I have enough time. They haven't put a clock back there. So the last few Sundays have been going too short, so I'm trying to even things out by going a little longer today. All joking aside, this has been one of the most painful sermons that I've had to prepare in a long time because it's forced me to look at myself. And I can't encourage you enough to look at your own lives. Look at the times that you have been economical with the truth. As J. John says, when you suffer truth decay. We live in a culture where truth is relative, but we serve a God who is the God of truth. So think of those people you would like to slander. Think of those people you would love to gossip about. Think of those people you would like to flatter for whatever purpose. And say, Lord, I'm sorry. Forgive me. When I was a very young minister, there was a Native American minister by the name of Simon Looking Elk. And I heard something about Simon Looking Elk, and I passed it on to some other ministers. It turned out not to be true. Simon Looking Elk, in his 60s, confronted me in a very nice sort of way. And English was not his original language. He was Lakota Sioux. And he said, the words that you spoke were not true. I just about melted. But then he said, I love you and I forgive you and I'd like to work with you and help you understand Native American culture. And Simon became my mentor and my friend. And he came to me after I'd really screwed up. But he gave me a second chance. And maybe there's somebody that needs to give you a second chance, but maybe you need to give someone a second chance. Take this very seriously, because you serve a God of truth. And the truth is that we are broken people, but we are forgiven people because of Jesus Christ.